From KPFK Pacifica in Los Angeles, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. President Donald Trump last week declared the opioid addiction crisis a, quote, public health emergency, which is one step short of calling it a national emergency. Trump had said in August that he would declare the nation's worst drug addiction crisis in history a national emergency, but his declaration enables funding from the Public Health Emergency Fund that critics point out is nearly empty. Trump's designation lasts only 90 days. Comedian John Oliver over the weekend concluded that the funding amounted to, quote, literally 2 cents per addict. Trump also claimed that his border wall and tougher immigration laws would stop heroin from flowing into the nation. The Drug Policy Alliance, which is one of the nation's leading organizations tackling the drug war, issued a statement saying, quote, Trump's approach to drugs ignores facts about the causes of the opioid overdose crisis, stigmatizes immigrants, and doubles down on policies that have already proven not only ineffective but devastating for people across the United States, particularly among communities of color. My guest is Grant Smith, Deputy Director of National Affairs at the Drug Policy Alliance. Welcome, Grant.
Hi, welcome. Thank you for having me on.
Thanks for joining us. So first, before we get into what it was that Trump said, when you take a look at what it is that's responsible for driving the crisis, there are painkillers that have opioids in them, such as OxyContin, and then there's heroin. The two have been linked. It's been found that about half of opioid users may turn to heroin. But in his speech, Trump did not say anything about the pharmaceutical industry and the kinds of painkillers that are prescribed. He only referred specifically to heroin, and he referred to his border wall. So how do you put it into context when we're trying to understand this crisis about what it is that's driving it?
Well, I think this is a really complex issue and a complex problem that's facing our country. You know, it began, if you look back into the 1990s, it began with in part an effort by physicians to better treat pain that patients are reporting to them, and an effort by pharmaceutical makers to take advantage of that that situation where you had the medical community trying to better treat pain. But underlying all of this, you've had a long-term neglect of our treatment infrastructure. You've had way too much emphasis on drug enforcement in this country and a war on drugs, and not enough money or time or investment placed into getting to the underlying reasons why people sometimes will use substances like opioids in ways that are not prescribed. And, you know, we have, you know, a situation where we have, you know, many communities that don't have access to effective treatment. We have much more emphasis on, you know, police taking down people who use substances, incarceration, separating families, and not enough emphasis on how do we reduce the harms associated with substances like opioids. And in the case of heroin, you mentioned the increase in heroin overdoses. This is actually indirectly a result of our heavy-handed you know, emphasis on drug enforcement in this country, and emphasis on responding to the opioid crisis with too much policing and not enough treatment and harm reduction.
Let's put this crisis into context. 64,000 people a year killed. That was just last year. This is more than guns or car accidents. More people, this is the New York Times reported, people are dying at a pace faster than the HIV epidemic did at its peak. So this is the deadliest drug crisis in American history. So what do you make of Donald Trump, rather than declaring this a national emergency, declaring it a public health emergency?
Well, I think it's a reflection of his, you know, his track record now of making, you know, a lot of promises but not delivering on those promises, especially when it comes to providing effective, you know, making the government, the federal government, you know, ensuring that the federal government adheres to its role as a way to provide better access to health care, to ensure that health care and other services are available. You know, President Trump, his public health emergency was mostly a rhetorical gesture. You know, it did open up a little bit of relief for some forms of treatment. There's some questions about how that treatment will be accessed because there's no funding attached to this emergency. You mentioned John Oliver's take on this, and it really amounts to virtually nothing in terms of funding.
2 cents per addict is essentially, essentially the Public Health Emergency Declaration means that funds from the Public Health Emergency Fund are available, but that fund, there's almost no money left there. So we're talking about just a few tens of thousands of dollars, maybe hundreds. Yeah, I believe it's a few tens of thousands of dollars to deal with a crisis that needs billions, right?
Right, and President Trump has made no commitment to deliver on funding, especially funding that we need, which is public health funding, funding for treatments like methadone and buprenorphine that are the most effective ways of managing opioid dependence and helping people move away from problematic substance use like heroin and opioid prescriptions, and as well as funding for harm reduction, reducing the harms associated with substance use. And, you know, this is not only going to impact communities that we've been hearing a lot about, a lot of rural and suburban communities around the country, majority white communities, but also communities of color that have been disproportionately impacted by the opioid crisis in one form or another for decades, but that have been neglected, but for the most part. And so this is a crisis that's going to likely continue because unhindered because of President Trump's unwillingness to really involve the federal government in a robust way that reflects an understanding that the federal government and its resources can affect lasting change if there's a commitment to really focus on what works and what's evidence-based.
Is there any upside to the fact that the language of calling it a public health emergency may cause a cultural shift in this country? I mean, a public health emergency certainly sounds better than we're going to wage a war on drugs, right?
It is helpful to think about it as a health emergency.
Right.
And the hope is that,
the problem is that there's nothing practical attached to making to addressing it.
There's nothing practical at the moment other than a few small regulatory changes that came with this directive. And there's a concern that, this administration, given its record so far of using rhetoric like this is a winnable war, and drugs are a plague, and people who use drugs need to be warned that they could be incarcerated for using them. This is the kind of rhetoric we heard from President Trump last week. We've heard from his Attorney General Jeff Sessions. Could they use language around emergency type rhetoric to as an excuse for escalating the war on drugs? And that's a concern we have. The hope is that Congress and lawmakers around the country will heed this emergency and actually use it to focus on what works, evidence-based treatment and harm reduction. Because we're not going to be able to stop drug use, but we can reduce the harms associated with it, and we can educate people and ensure people are adequately informed about the risk. And that's even something we haven't done as a country. We haven't emphasized some of the risk associated with opioid use in ways that would actually help reduce overdose deaths. Using an opioid with alcohol is a contributor to death, but that's not something that you hear much about.
So what you're saying is if there was better public education about how these drugs work, you might help addicts not die.
Right. So if we had honest and accurate and evidence-based education that's delivered to the public, that would help. President Trump, he signaled last week that he's more interested in a just say no type of approach, which we tried in the past and has failed.
Right. So there's been this sense among politicians for years that if you actually talk about how to use drugs a little bit more safely, you end up tacitly making them permissible. Instead, of course, what other countries have tried is if you do that, if you give people, for example, a safe place to inject, give them better education about how those drugs work, you actually do help them stay alive, and then there is the option for treatment and harm reduction.
That's right. That's right. We found that, the just say no approach and, heavy-handed, sort of strategies like law enforcement and scare tactics, has not reduced drug use. It has not reduced harm. It's actually done the opposite.
It's like saying abstention is the answer to teen pregnancy rather than education about contraception and sex education.
That's right. And if you look at, advertising, education campaigns around tobacco, for instance, we've seen a steady reduction in tobacco use without, having to resort to prohibition, or at least, blanket prohibition, and scare tactics. We've relied more on evidence-based education, encouraging people to take a look at the health risk and understanding that this harms other people around them, particularly with the case of tobacco, and that's helped to reduce use, not only amongst adults, but also amongst young people.
So let's look at what Trump actually said, because he did talk about advertising. He said in his speech on Thursday that one of the things our administration will be doing is a massive advertising campaign to get people, especially children, not to want to take drugs in the first place, because they will see the devastation and the ruination it causes to people and people's lives. This is basically part of that just say no approach, the scare tactics you were talking about.
That's right. And that I think is a warning sign that we should be very vigilant, that, the Trump administration, that Sessions is very influential here in terms of, he's been saying similar things for a long time, truly believes in this sort of, punitive, just say no type approach. And I think we have to be very vigilant that this administration could, misuse framing such as an emergency, a national emergency, could try to bring us back to some of these hardline tactics and strategies that we know will actually do more harm than good. It will actually increase the harm to people's lives and not deliver relief that we need in all communities.
He also talked about heroin, and as I mentioned earlier, he said, we must stop the flow of all types of illegal drugs into our communities. For too long, dangerous criminal cartels have been allowed to infiltrate and spread throughout our nation. An astonishing 90% of the heroin in America comes from south of the border, where we will be building a wall, which will greatly help in this problem. Trump added, it will have a great impact. My administration is dedicated to enforcing our immigration laws, defending our maritime security, and securing our borders. He said this during a speech about the opioid crisis. He did not mention pharmaceutical companies at all. Grant?
Right. I mean, clearly it's a misrepresentation. It's a distraction from, where we need to be going. And, a border wall is not going to make any change, have any effect on supply. We've poured billions of dollars into supply side strategies, along the southwest border and in other respects, with little impact on supply in the United States. The president's speech was very focused around some language, some rhetoric that reiterated some of his racist overtones around people who some of our neighbors to the south, as well as implicating Mexicans and other other peoples, for blaming them essentially for something that really began here in the United States and is really more complicated, much more complicated than simply blaming one group or one rationale. So the pharmaceutical companies have a role in this.
Right. And so how would you address that role? I mean, in addition to the sort of public health education that and drug addiction treatment programs that your organization recommends, what do you recommend needs to happen with the pharmaceutical industry? Because there are legitimate concerns around needing opioid prescription pain meds for people living with chronic pain.
Right, and I think we have to be very careful about not swinging the pendulum too far in the other direction. We went from the 1990s and 2000s where, some of these opioid medications were perhaps prescribed too liberally, to where we could be going in the other direction to having a more, an approach that's too restrictive to prescribing these pain relievers, knowing that we don't have any really clear alternatives to managing pain right now. I mean, I think there's research underway, and there's hope that at some point we'll have alternatives to opioids to manage pain. Medical marijuana is potentially one of those alternatives, and there's been some evidence that supports that, you know, medical marijuana can help provide alternative relief for pain for people who are dealing with chronic or acute pain. But the pharmaceutical companies, you know, have a role to play, and that they have to own up to some of the dishonesty that was playing out in the 1990s in terms of misrepresenting some of the potential harms of using these medications. And they have a role to play in terms of helping to ensure that, you know, they're not, you know, overly marketing these medications, or, you know, pressuring, you know, medical community to use them in ways that are unnecessary. But I think the federal government and the medical community have a really important role to play in terms of, you know, trying to keep that balance. You know, we want to ensure that we're not, you know, backing ourselves into a corner where we're, you know, bringing back, you know, bringing a new form of prohibition into place. And you heard President Trump's remarks last week where he talked about banning one of these opioid medications. And there's been a lot of focus in the Department of Justice and within the administration around, and in Congress, about, you know, penalizing drug companies and restricting access and limiting supplies of medications. And I think really the focus needs to be on, you know, more on, you know, how can we better educate physicians? How can we provide better guidelines for prescribing? How can we find, you know, alternatives to opioid medications like medical marijuana that, you know, can help and reduce risk?
And then finally, Grant, there's also sort of a broader framework that very rarely gets discussed, which is that drug addiction often goes hand in hand with economic injustice, with financial devastation, and people feel hopeless. They tend to be more susceptible to addiction. We don't hear that being discussed enough. It may not be a coincidence that we're seeing this crisis around the same time where there just isn't enough of an economic recovery in so many communities around the country, right?
That's right. I mean, there is certainly a relationship between where you see the opioid crisis in terms of having the biggest impact and economic, loss of economic opportunity. Places like West Virginia and Kentucky, as well as, you know, large cities like New York and Boston. And so, you know, there is a relationship there, although it is affecting nearly every community and every part of this country as well.
Including, you mean across class as well?
Across class as well. And actually, you know, we started to notice a shift in Congress towards being more open to a more compassionate approach. And I would put that in air quotes if I could. But, you know, because there hasn't been a real commitment in Congress to addressing this as a public health response, although they've taken some steps in that direction. And that happened after, you know, more affluent congressional districts began to be impacted. And you had
right.
Republican lawmakers in Congress saying, oh, wait, you know.
People who are seen as more human, sadly.
Yeah, well, in their eyes, as well as, you know, people who I think, you know, donate to campaigns and, you know, people who have, you know, businessmen and others who are being impacted in these communities by this crisis, by overdoses, losing family members. I think that's when we started to really see a change of heart, or at least an openness in Congress to, you know, calling it a public health approach, even mm-hmm. though, you know, if you look at the budget, it's still, you know, more money going to drug enforcement than treatment. And so I think, you know, there are economic factors here, but one of the biggest things we can do is ensuring that, you know, harm reduction and treatment is integrated into every community and available, widely available. Without that, you know, without having access to things like naloxone, which rapidly reverses an overdose, without having access to methadone and buprenorphine in communities, without having access to effective education, you know, you're not going to see a change in this crisis.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Grant, for joining us today. Is there a website for the Drug Policy Alliance you can share with us?
Yes, thank you. It's www.drugpolicy.org.
And we'll post that to our site later. Thanks so much, Grant.
Thank you so much for having me on.
My guest is Grant Smith, Deputy Director of National Affairs at the Drug Policy Alliance. We've been discussing Donald Trump's position on the opioid crisis. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.